This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. A new report finds 1 in 10 Michigan children have had a parent incarcerated. Coming up, the Kids Count Project Director for the Michigan League for Public Policy, Alicia Guevara Warren, joins us to discuss what those kids need. But first, next week, voters will decide whether the Village of Richland should be dissolved. That issue will be on the ballot Tuesday in both the Village and in Richland Township. If voters approve the measure with a two-thirds vote, that the Village would then be vacated, in the words of the ballot proposal, and become part of the township. To explain what a village is, how it can dissolve, and what would happen next, we're turning to Eric Lufer. He's the president of the Citizens Research Council and has also done extensive research on local government operations and consolidation in Michigan. Eric Lufer, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
So let's first explain, what is a village and how is a village different from, say, a city or a township?
So in Michigan, we have our state laid out. We have 83 counties, and every resident resides in a county. Within each county, you reside either in a township or in a city. When a city incorporates and that land is set aside, it stops being part of a township. But we have created this structure called villages that kind of layers on top of the township. So residents that are residents of a village continue to be residents of a township. In the grand scheme of things, when the system of local government was established more than a century ago, there was supposed to be this sort of stepping stone, climbing the ladder, that you would have rural agrarian areas that would only need basic services, and the township would provide that. And as people began to amass in certain areas, such as we see with this village, kind of the crossroads of two roads, and people begin to come together, they would have need for greater services, some level of public safety, maybe some parks are needed, or garbage collection, some water and sewer eventually. So they would ask for a higher level of services, and the village was to provide that in a way that it was layering on top of the township services to serve their needs. At some point, that village would grow to such an extent that they needed sort of full-blown municipal services and eventually become a city. So that was supposed to be the grand scheme of things. But about half a century ago, we sort of abandoned that stepping stone or ladder approach to the way we should do things and kind of settled into what we had then. So now we have a lot of townships that are very municipal in nature. They kind of look and sound like a city, but they don't call themselves a city, and they still have a governance structure of a township. Villages, some are very small, such as Richland. Some are, you would again mistake for a city. They seem to be doing everything a city does. And we have some cities that are, you know, not so big, kind of look like a village in some ways. So there was supposed to be some rhyme or reason to how we did things, but we've abandoned that, and that's why we have the system we have today.
So if a village decides that the citizens of that village decide that they would like to dissolve the village, what happens?
Basically, you are then turning over the property, both real property, such as buildings and equipment and desks and computers, everything like that. All of that becomes the property of the township, unless there's a reason for it to go somewhere else. But in my experience, there really has not been that sort of need. The township then, where it's happened before, there's been some proposal that the township would enhance the services that it has done and try to pick up the slack, so to speak. But it's basically just leveling things out, and the taxes that had been levied on those village residents go away. They receive a lesser level of services. But again, in the past, there has been some effort to accommodate the needs of those people residing in a more dense area within the township.
And when we say when this has happened before, we're talking about a proposal being on the ballot because there has yet to be a case where it's been approved, correct?
Correct. There has been a few proposals in the last decade or so. They have come to a vote and none have been approved. The other thing that we should add as part of this discussion is we do have unincorporated villages within the state, places where there is a dense concentration of people, and they have called themselves a village, but there is no organized election of village officials. There's no additional tax levied, but there is a geographic area that they consider a village, and that's sort of the where people identify that they live. So those villages, so to speak, have never been incorporated, and they've never needed to disincorporate or dissolve, such as we're talking about here. But they're still places where people are happy to live and happy to associate with.
The Citizens Research Council, and you in particular, Erica, spent some time working with some communities in northern Michigan where they considered dissolving a village. Kind of take us through what happened up there and how that process played out.
So just like this village, Richland, it was a general law village, and the residents there had made a fair number of the residents had made the judgment that the municipal finances of the village were becoming unsustainable and that the township services had grown enough that the area served by the village might be just as well off without paying the extra taxes and just serving things generally. They used a provision within the General Law Village Act that was put there in 1998 that created a commission. What we have found, and I think the impetus for putting this into the law, was that people tend not to vote. They tend to vote no when they don't understand what's going to happen or afraid of what they think is going to happen. So this provision says, let's create a commission, let's get representatives from the township area and the village area and have them come together and look at different aspects of the village operations, what to do with property, how to incorporate the ordinances into the township ordinances, what to do with the data, and kind of the full range from A to Z of how to deal with the village if it goes away. That body met on several occasions and created a report, made recommendations for what should happen. Ultimately, because of a lot of local politics, the village board decided not to adopt that report, and they ended up going back to the same process that's being used in Richland Village that requires a supermajority vote. When it actually was put on the ballot and came to a vote, it didn't receive the majority, let alone a supermajority, and it was defeated. But we, I think, learned a lot from that process, that the township government up there, and I think this is true for a lot of townships today, have grown in sophistication, grown in service delivery such that they would be able to absorb the village services, provide an enhanced level of services without much cost to the township residents, and the residents of those communities would be well served. It was our recommendation following that process that sort of commission process be sort of mandatory for anybody wanting to go through this, whether it is two cities thinking about merging like we saw in Saugatuck and Douglas last year, whether it was any sort of villages disincorporated, anything like that. Let's go through and think it through and have a sound process to decide what's going to happen and how to go forward.
You mentioned the requirement of a supermajority vote under this process. You know, the CRC report does question that, says it's not clear why a supermajority vote should be required to disincorporate a village. That does seem to set the bar pretty high, doesn't it?
It is a high bar, and, you know, this is the livelihood of people, and I don't mean to belittle that in any way, But again, I just mentioned the Saugatuck and Douglas proposed merger. You have two cities that were going to affect the livelihood of the people that live there or that come there recreationally during out the summer. That only required a simple majority. To create a village only requires a simple majority. So what is it about dissolving a village, making a village go away, that should require setting the bar so high? It's not quite clear to me, as sort of a impartial observer of public policy, why that should require a supermajority and other changes in local government don't require that. And of course, we have other provisions in state law for requiring a supermajority, and those tend to be a very high, you're affecting impeaching somebody or doing things of high importance. And, you know, again, not to belittle what's going on, because this is important to the people in Richland Village, but is it really raised to that level? It's not clear to me that it does.
We recently just spoke with you regarding the Citizens Research Council's 100th anniversary. Again, congratulations. And one of the things we talked about was this whole issue of local government. And I guess I wonder if maybe the vote in Richland and maybe the discussions that go on in some other places are part of a larger conversation going on in the state right now about the size of units of local government and how many we need.
I'm not sure that it is part of that conversation, but I think it should be. What we were able to see when we looked at Anekama a couple years ago, and when we looked at Saugatuck and Douglas last year, is that there are real savings to be had by creating efficiencies through the reduction in the number of local units of government. Michigan has an extraordinarily large number of local governments, in part because we have township government, but also because we have these very many villages and these small cities populating our state. And so we can't, on the one hand, complain that taxes are too high or have municipal officials complaining that our municipal finance structure is not sustainable, and not turn around on the other hand and question the structure of local government that sets up to have so many units of government and the duplication of service provision and the extra costs that are created by having so many units of government. So, I think we need to have that dialogue. The state, for the most part, has kept a hands-off approach to these types of things, and I sort of question that. If they're going to continue to take away tax base, such as exempting personal property, doing the types of things that is going on at the state level that is affecting units of government, they need to, on the other hand, help local governments to work through these things and be proactive when there are opportunities for savings, for helping the residents to understand how this fits into the big picture and how change is possible for the positive.
As the CRC report notes, of course, there's no exit polling on a vote like the one in Anekama, but what were you able to glean from talking to people up there, and was there some consensus about why the vote did not even reach the majority of that population up there, much less the supermajority that it would have needed?
Tip O'Neill, the former Speaker of the House, U.S. House of Representatives, once said that all politics is local.
Right.
And no place is that more evident than when you start getting into these small units of government where everybody knows everybody, and the conversations around the coffee shops and then, you know, the grocery stores and things like that, where everyone has a chance to talk, that it just escalates. And so I think what we saw in Anekama and what we've seen in other places where this takes place is that it becomes very personal for people. It becomes very emotional for people. And we certainly saw that in Anekama, that former neighbors that were formerly friends alienated each other, pushed each other away because of their feelings on this type of thing. we were able to show that there are savings to be had, that there it would positively affect the checkbooks of the people living in the village area, but the emotions outweighed the sort of pocketbook decisions on these sorts of things.
Eric Lufer, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me on. Good luck to the people in Richland Village who have this decision before them.
Eric Lufer is the president of the Citizens Research Council of Michigan. There's a longer version of the interview with Eric Lufer and links to their research on local government consolidation, plus the campaigns on both sides of the ballot issue in Richland at WMUK.org.